Okay. Today I'd like to deal with two couples, but there's a slight twist to it. It's two different couples, but it's the same husband. But it's the husband with two different wives. Now, that we've done already. We did Elkanah with Hannah and Peninnah, but actually this is the twist. It's not that. It's the wife with two different husbands. This time it's a woman in Tanakh married to two different men. So who could that fit in the Bible? How many women can we fit?
David.
Abigail would be one.
Michal
would be one.
What about Ruth?
Ruth would be one. Hannah is the wife of a man who has two wives.
Oh, wow.
We're talking about a woman married to two different men in the Bible.
Oh.
Now, this is significant because in the ancient world, when a woman's husband died, she couldn't remarry in many, many cultures.
Really?
If he died, or if he divorced her, she wasn't allowed to remarry. So the Torah specifically says if a woman husband divorces her and then she marries another man, she can't go back to the original husband but she can certainly marry another man.
Wow, and there are cultures that did not.
Well, there are some cultures today that if the husband dies, the woman sets herself on fire.
Right, yeah.
But there's the one I wanted the Darshan to learn about today is that no one got yet.
Married to more than one
man in the Bible.
At the same time?
No, not at the same time. Well, Michal was, pretty close. Michal was, Shaul took Michal from David and gave her to Palti ben Laish. I don't see that David gave her a get there, He just ran out the window. I don't know if he had a chance to throw her a get. You know what I'm saying?
Sarah, you mean or no? Because they never got to marriage. Esther, no, she wasn't married to him.
No, so... You're very close. Some of you mentioned people who were in the same time as she was.
Right.
It's true. Michal was married to David and Palti ben Laish. But as the rabbis say, he never touched her.
Right.
He said, I'm not going to go near a woman who's married to a man.
The king is right.
Even if the king tells me I have to do it, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So he put a sword in the bed and he said, no one's pass over this sword. And so, of course, it's Bathsheba. Bathsheba, right?
Oh, of course.
She was married to Uriah, and she was married to David. Okay. All right. But David did not marry her until she was divorced from her. Now, David did in marriage to Bathsheba circumvent a very, very serious. It's an extremely serious prohibition in the Gemara in the Halacha. That a woman should never be married to two different men within 3 months. Even if the first husband was 90 years old and in jail.
Even if he dies.
Of course if he dies. Yeah.
So you have to wait 90 days?
Just to wait 90 months? To the 91st day.
Oh, because what if?
Pregnant from the first husband.
The one with the coin.
Right.
So we said, but we say lo plug, even if he's 90 years old and he was in jail and he hasn't seen her in 10 years, it don't make any differences. A woman should never be the wife of two different men within 91 days.
Right.
Whether she's 20 or whether she's 90 or whatever it is, whether he's 20, he's 90, never, no exceptions. However, in the Tanakh, when Uriah dies in battle, thanks to David's scheme, so when Uriah dies, it says, Vayavor ha'evel, as soon as the Shiva was over, which is a big kasha upon the Gemara that says that Uriah divorced her.
Yeah.
Because when men went to war, they divorced their wives.
Right.
What Shiva was there? She's not married to... Why did she... All right, it doesn't say Vayavor ha'shiva, Vayavor ha'evel, she mourned for him. I would hope that a woman who's very much in love with her young husband would rather stay with her husband than even be married to the king. Right? David didn't do bad by her. She became the mother of the next king, right? Not a bad deal. But still, wouldn't she rather be... So here's our question. Today we're going to discuss Bathsheba and Uriah. Did Bathsheba and Uriah have a good marriage or a bad marriage? We have some hints. Now, I'm sorry, I don't usually like to do this in the Bible class, but in the film with Gregory Peck called David and Bathsheba, filmed, I believe, in 1951, the film makes it so that Bathsheba and Uriah's marriage was a terrible marriage. He was abusive, and he never came home, and he was in battle all the time, and their whole marriage, they had four nights together, and that's Hollywood. Because when it comes to adultery is wrong, whether the man is acting like a hero for her and saving her from an abusive marriage or not. As soon as she has her divorce, okay, now get on your white horse and then save her or something like that, you know. But if she's married, at least it was an abusive marriage. No, right. So the question is, that's Hollywood. I understand what Hollywood is doing. Remember, did I ever show? There's a film called Jeremiah with Patrick Dempsey. Right? You showed it once about seven, eight years ago. So in that film, I thought it's very well done. In that film, Yirmiyahu has a love interest. He's in love with someone in the film. Why would they do that? There's no hint in the whole Bible, in the whole 52 Hollywood. Chapters of Jeremiah. No, but I think I like that they did that. Why? Mm-hmm. Because in chapter 16 of the book of Jeremiah, what does Hashem tell that prophet? You cannot marry and have children in this place. Now, if Hashem tells him don't get married and have children in this place, it's because he was inclined to. Mm-hmm. Why would Hashem tell him not to get married unless he had a love interest? I think that was poetic license on the part of the movie maker. Uh-huh. I think that's justified.
What if her father just kicked her out and forced her to marry Uriah? Probably the case.
One never knows. I'll tell you that. But I don't like to think that every marriage ipso facto was something like that. But here is the one thing. There is and this is what I like to call deliberate ambiguity on the part of the Bible. Sometimes the Bible is purposely ambiguous about a particular issue, and for good reason, because it wants us to talk about it like this. Is there any hint in Samuel 2, chapter 11, that Uriah and Bathsheba did not have a good marriage? And you can say that it shouldn't matter because adultery is adultery, but okay. But did Bathsheba go willingly to David when he called for her?
Seems like it, didn't she?
He's the king. You got to obey the king, no? And if she says, my king, I appreciate your invitation, but I'm a married woman.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. You know, when he inquires of her, when he sees her bathing, mm-hmm. right? Vatidrosh la isha, Rashi says, is she married or not? Right? You know, in the film, he says, oh, that's the, whose home is that? That's the home of Uriah, your trusted servant. Uriah, by the way, was one of David's chief generals. He commanded tens of thousands of soldiers.
Wow.
Right? Yes, he's listed at the end of Shmuel Bet as one of David's highest soldiers. He didn't just send a nine, he sent a two or a three, you know, Stratego, right? So he says, that's the home of your general Uriah. So he says, does Uriah have a sister? No, he was hoping that it was Uriah's sister, not Uriah's wife, because of the water. So Batidrosh Leisha means he checked into her, is this a married woman or not? Right? Now, do you remember the answer they gave him when he asked that question? Right, so they, but the way they answered, let's open up the Tanakh now.
Isn't there a hint that he wasn't always home or something? I don't know.
Yeah, well, another hint. It says so in the story.
You know, very plain.
Okay, so the answer they gave to when he asked, who is this? We have a page number from somewhere.
746.
Thank you.
So when he inquires about this woman, the answer that he gets is, Halo Zos Bat Sheva Bas Eliam Eishes Uriah Hachiti. This one line is very, very instructive. It's chapter 11, verse 3. Vayishlach David Vayidrosh La Isha. He sent a messenger, find out about her. Right? And he said, Halo Zos Bat Sheva. Why not just Zos Bat Sheva? How does the English read?
La Isha Vayomer Halo Zot.
Halo
Zot. Halo Zot Bat Sheva Baselium Isha Surya.
Baselium Asher Uriah.
Isha Surya. Why not just say, who is this woman? And answer, this woman is
Isha Surya.
Instead, it says, Halo Zot.
What is that?
Yes, I'm going to have a story.
What does it mean, hello?
Hello, read it in English.
What is
that? Is this not?
Is this
said,
not?
Is this not?
Is this not Bathsheba? When he says something like that, David, isn't that Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah, the daughter of Eliam? Do you know who that is? Don't you know who that is? In other words, Halo Zos Bathsheba implies that, David, you should know who that is. She's the wife of one of your chief generals, but more important, who is Eliam in Israel? Recognize the name? This is, you have to read through the lines. Eliam is also a famous person. He is the son of a man who is going to be very famous later in Shmuel Bet, who is almost going to cost David his kingdom. Achitophel. Says Sheila correctly.
He's the son of
Achitophel. Achitophel is right now David's chief advisor. It says in the Shmuel Bet that when you asked him advice, it was like asking the Urim B'Tumim, he touched the stones, right? He would always give the right advice. Now, giving the right advice is not necessarily giving the moral advice. When Avshalom asked him, what's the best way for me to kill my father, the best advice should have been, don't kill your father. But he gave him the best advice about to kill your father. If you ask someone, what's the best way to rob a bank, best advice is, you shouldn't be robbing a bank. Maybe that's a bad idea. Instead, you give him, okay, let me give you the plan. This is how you'll get away with it. So the right advice is not always the moral advice, right? So Achitophel ends up being quite an immoral guy later in Shmuel Bet. But right now, he's David's chief advisor, and this is his granddaughter, David. Mm-hmm. Right? That means she's probably pretty young, but okay, but still, David, you know, I don't know how old David is now, so there are lots of reasons to stay away from this. One, she's married. Two, she's married to a general. Three, she's the granddaughter of one of the most important, influential people in your kingdom. This is stay away, stay away, stay away in bright lights.
Almost like a Hamlet.
Right? Because the person answering the question by answering it this way knows what David wants. Right? He's not calling for her to give her an award for her husband. Which is, by the way, what the movie has him doing. You see, he calls her and she goes, why are you calling me, O Lord? And he says, I'd like to give you a token of my appreciation for your husband's proficiency in prosecuting the battle against the Ammonites, right? So anyway, I'm just saying that this also explains why when David calls Uriah back from battle, right? Why is it so crucial to him to call Uriah back from battle? To spend time with Bathsheba. Why is it important to spend time with Bathsheba?
Because he, who knows what happened, right?
Not who knows what happened.
Yeah, who knows what might...
She's pregnant already.
Okay.
He knows she's pregnant. Yes.
He told him.
Right? Rashi says all this. I mean, Rashi says she knows she's pregnant, so we got to spend some time together. Now, had he gone home, the Radak says, David would have washed his hand clean of it. Forget it. He sent a member of his kingdom to do something, and he doesn't do it. He sent him home, and he said, if he goes home, and she has an excuse, look how abhorrent abortion is. Right? He could just, they had what's called at that time, koshel ekrin. They had abortificants that you drink, and you abort the baby. They had them then.
Oh, they did have that then?
Yes, yes. That's not chas v'shalom. It's not an option in this story. David says, "Let my kingdom fall. I'm not gonna lose this baby." Right? He could also leave her out to dry out in the wind. He can just say she says he's the father of the child.
Because no one.
Who's going to believe her over the king?
Right.
Right. In the immorality of this story, we do see morality. For one thing, there's no other king on planet Earth at that time who has to worry anything about any of this. Right? The fact that the prophet is about to tell him, you've sinned and here is your punishment, and the prophet doesn't get killed, no prophet dares tell a king that you did wrong. Like, what are you talking about?
King is God.
Okay, but there's one interesting hint I would like to suggest, that when David did send for her, she did not want to go. How do we know that?
I don't know.
I'll give you the hint is in verse 4. Can you pass the water back down a bit? The hint is in verse 4. But you really have to find it. What?
Verse 4?
Well, it says, Vayishlach David Malachim Vayikochecho. Yeah, okay, he took her as if though. But the next words, Vatavo a love. Didn't have to say about Tavoe love, it's just about Yikochecho, but
Yishkavimah. Isn't the word usually, he knew his wife?
Or
he knew,
I'll tell you this, Vayavo Eleho is the biblical way normally. He knew is very rarely. It's used in Bereishis, it's used in Shmuel Aleph.
Which?
But Vayeda. It would not be the way. The Bible mentions about 60 times this expression, and only 3 or 4 is he knew. So the most common way of saying this expression is Vayavo Eleho. It came unto her. Here it switches. It's she
switches.
Came to him.
Doesn't that seem to suggest that she wanted to?
Well, he does. Well, as you pointed out, it does say Vayikocheho. He took her, but no, that's not the suggestion I'm making. But Tavo Elov instead of Vayavo Eleho is interesting, but I don't know if that is convincing. I don't know if it's compelling. There is, however, something else in this pasuk. It's a short pasuk, so yes. Look for it. Okay, that is, I'll tell you, a proof that's given by some that she was. Remember, her husband is in battle.
Yes.
To this day, when Israeli men go to battle, if they're married, they give their wives conditional divorces.
I'll get
al tnai that says that if I am missing an action and I am not found within, let's say, 2 years from the end of this battle, they can make up the time themselves, then you are considered divorced from this time, from this moment, so that she's not an aguna. Right? A woman who doesn't know what happened to her husband, I believe in American law, it's 7 years. Remember the famous case in the Civil War, a man came home, he lost his memory, had amnesia, and finally found his way home, and he saw his wife was remarried to another man.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
In the Civil War, so they wrote into legislation that if a man is missing in action, his wife must wait 7 years until she gets permission from the state, and then she's not a bigamist. That is a long time. In halacha, however, without this get, is she's an aguna. She can't be married. So look, when let's say a man who was at Nebuch in the World Trade Center in 9/11, he went to work, he tried to call, but his phone didn't work, and she did. Right? So they solved every single case. They figured out where he was, what office he was. They solved, there was no. But just imagine the following scenario. I'm not saying that this existed. I'm not saying it existed. Chas v'shalom. I'm just saying the following scenario: a man is late coming to work. Right, and he hears what happened, and he says, "Oh, this is my chance." He disappears and goes off to Hawaii, right? And his wife thinks that he died in the tower, but he's really alive, right? and I'm just saying, no woman was caught by this, but the point is that when men go to battle at this time, and there's even a hint to this in Shmuel Aleph. It says when the Israelites were fighting the Philistines in the Goliath fight, and I was just there, we're in the place where they fought.
Emek.
Near, like
in between.
It's amazing. Between two large mountains, mountainous areas, and there's a whole Emek, a whole valley right in between where the fight took place. So the groups, the tourists, take the little round stones from there. They think maybe this is one of the stones that David killed Goliath. So my son lives right near there, in the walking distance. So when they were fighting Goliath, it says that David delivered the tokens from the men back to their wives. What were these tokens? Gifts that they got in gift shops while they were in battle. The tokens were these divorce documents that their wives shouldn't be left. Okay, so can you put that down? Yeah. So that they the wives shouldn't be stuck. Okay, here's the point. When it says v'hi miskadeshes mitumasa, that's what the rabbis say she was. He saw her bathing. She was on her roof. Now, the king's palace is up. We know where it is now. It's in near you. It's called Ir David. And the palace is up on a hill, and beneath it's an Arab village called Silwan. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's where the tunnel tourists go, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the king doing? He's allowed to walk on his patio. Yeah. You know, he's not snooping or anything. So the Gemara says that she was bathing behind the screen, and the screen blew down in the wind, and he caught a glimpse. He should have turned away, but all right. So the bathing was not just washing. She was going to the mikveh. That's what this pasuk says. V'niskadeshes mitumasa.
But that's after Vayishka.
He slept with her, and this is just saying. And by the way, she was miskadeshes mitumasa. Because there are two questions a man has to ask if he wants a woman to come straight to his bedroom.
Right. Are you
married? And two, are you Tahara now?
Yeah.
She's a young woman. A man can't ask her to just go to a woman and just say, come into my... He has to make sure that she's in the proper state of ritual purity. Right?
That's why maybe you're supposed to...
So here is an interesting proof. Ravenel uses this as proof
that she was...
Yeah, she was not a married woman. She got this conditional divorce, or even possibly a full divorce from her husband. Right? You see, the reason why Rabbeinu Tam says she was fully divorced, because if she was conditionally divorced, David is shooting himself in the foot by sending him home.
Yes.
Then she will retroactively be a married woman at that time.
Again.
Right. Well, what do you mean?
Unless she's fully divorced.
Why is this? Where is... Because she went to the mikveh? Why is
verse
that?
Verse 4.
Yeah, why does that imply that she was divorced?
I don't know. When a woman commits adultery, does she make sure to go to the mikveh first?
Some
might.
Oh, really? Oh, oh. Yeah, why not? Some people, women, go in.
She'll take a shower, maybe, but she goes to the mikveh. Really? I'm a married woman going to... What does she care? She doesn't care about adultery. She doesn't care about neither either. You know what I'm saying?
So that's implying that she went willingly.
She went willing to the mikveh. She was toveling in the mikveh.
Yeah.
And the mikvehs, by the way, at that time were usually on the roof. The roof was the best place to put a mikveh
because it catches the rain.
Mm-hmm. You get it, in a big enough receptacle. I mean, one winter you can make a mikveh.
So is that where she was when David saw her?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
I haven't got, I'm trying to prove that she did not go willingly to him. Yes.
I have a question. Is it possible, see, in here Radak says that about Uriah, that either he was a proselyte of Hittite descent, or if he was an Israelite who dwelled in a Hittite area. We don't even know his identity.
But the Talmud asks that question well before the Radak. And the Talmud says that he was a Jewish man who was born in the Hittite area. No, he's called Uriah the Hittite, right? He was not a Hittite. He was a Jewish man. Uriah is a very, very Hebrew Jewish name. It's not Hittites is Canaanite. It's not. I understand that's an appeal to say that it wasn't a halachically recognized marriage, but the Gemara doesn't like that. I know it's a very easy. It's still an immoral situation.
Because he could undo it, right?
Yeah.
He could undo the conversion.
Yeah, but it's not. It's not an answer the Gemara likes.
Well, if feel like it's...
It's not a creative answer, but it's not.
I get, like, that we need very much to, as much as possible, try to rehabilitate David because he's, like, in the kind of pantheon of things. But what... Like, it just seems, like, very problematic that we're trying... We're focusing almost on splitting hairs. Did he technically sin as opposed to did he commit... you would call it a despicable act, basically taking a married man's wife and then sending that man to his death. And why are we so... It's almost like Naval Rishut HaTorah, like we're trying to like justify that by saying... And God himself said, this isn't me saying it, obviously.
Okay, you're right. You look, when someone says a lot of these arguments in the Gemara, and his name, Rebbe, the author of the Mishnah, Rav, his student, said, well, I understand why Rebbe is so gung-ho on absolving
him. He's
a direct descendant. Okay, in economy, when the prophet tells him, Gam Hashem Hevir Eschatoscha Lo Tamus, that God will bear your iniquity for you, you will not die, the implication is obvious. You should die for this.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't, because I need you, whatever the reason is. But
the child died.
The child dies, yeah. And that's punishment. It's punishment for the... Why the child has to suffer
for
father's sins.
Four of his sons were required.
Yes.
When you go to the Torah, if you took something from someone, you had to pay.
Which particular thing? One thing you have to pay fourfold.
A sheep.
Because that's the story. It tells me about a man who stole the sheep. So you pay fourfold for sheep. The Gemara in Maseches Yuma says four of David's children died
four.
In his lifetime. So he spoke about the... But let's get to that parable in just a moment. Because that's really a linchpin in this discussion. Because when, but the one point that no one got in verse 4 yet. It's such a minute point. I don't know if you'll even agree with me that it's. If you were David, and you wanted to get Bathsheba to come to your house, what would you do?
Go yourself.
Not
if it's
king.
Right.
He said a lot of people.
Why
he
does it say by Yishlach Malochim?
He said, no, maybe not. Maybe send more than once, like a couple times, not only at the same time.
That's what I think. You would never send two or three or four men on an official visit and bring one man. Because two men will wink at each other and say, well,
secret.
You came once. They'll laugh, they'll smirk at each other. You know, you send one man. By Yishlach Malochim, look. Look at verse 4. He sent messengers. So I think that's the truth. He sent one after the other. He sent a messenger, and he said, the king would like to see you. And he goes, I can't go again. He sent seven messengers, he sent nine men, I don't know, he sent numerous...
Like Bilam.
Finally, she said, okay, what does he want? So that could be an indication that he didn't send three at the same time. No, he sent three different ones.
The same guy.
And then finally, she just said, okay, Abracha, I have to go. All right, so she conceives. Fine. So we know that's that part of it. David has to go continue with the ruse. Now, but keep in mind, I don't want to use my benchmark of the immorality of other kings at that time. But I do want to tell you that bear in mind that the fact that he's trying to cover this up is indicative of some element that we spoke of before. One of those things is to send Uriah home. And he sends him home at first, and he refuses to go home. He tells him, Chas v'sholom, I should go home when my men are in the battlefield, and the Aron is outside, and it's in battle also. Yes. My men are suffering, and I should go and have comfort with my wife.
Is that an indication also that he wasn't too interested
in... So there you have it. So does it. But he's a man of extreme honor, right? And he doesn't want to go home. He hasn't seen his wife in who knows how many months.
But he knows that she's in bed. Okay.
You think he doesn't go home because
yes.
Men on the street told him there's some unfortunate that say that. Some of those people said, Uriah, do you know what your wife did the other night?
Yeah.
Right? So he said, I'm not going home to such a woman.
But he can do just check Shasota. And then see, they have this all this Shasota preparation. He can do it. If he doesn't trust her, he can
you
do Shasota.
You don't need that.
Never warned her. He can't do that. He never warned her. But here is the thing that You know, the Gemara says that when a man ever has an illicit relationship with a married woman, he is forever forbidden to her.
Yes.
Now, that is a phenomenal statement, considering the fact that David did not stay forbidden to her. He married her right afterwards, very quickly afterwards. He had to, because she's pregnant already. So it has to look like his eight and a half month, you know, child.
Mm-hmm.
Child dies. Most children in 8th month died back then.
Yes.
So that's what it looked like to everybody. I think no one in Israel knew about this. If people in Israel had known about this, this is where I think
this is
where the movie goes wrong. Because the movie has Avshalom's revolt based on this.
No, it was pure ambition. Pure ambition.
But it's not in the Bible.
It's not.
Avshalom does not. If that, and here's the proof. Had Avshalom known about this, then he would have used it.
He would have broadcast it.
Or better than Avshalom. Which other son of David should have really used Bathsheba, the whole Bathsheba origins?
Adoniyahu,
in the beginning of Melach Malif.
Who?
Adoniyahu. You know what I'm talking about, right? In the Haftarah of Parshas Chayisara. The guy in the beginning, but David's very old, and Bathsheba comes in and says, didn't you promise that Shlomo would be the next king?
Adoniyahu
should scream from the rooftops.
Oh, you mean
this boy is a mamzer. You shouldn't be king. You should mother his look what his mother did, and you should was married to another man. And he would, right? Now, when Shlomo was conceived, of course, she was married to David, but still, by the very fact...
She was forbidden to him.
David did a wrong thing. By the lights of the Tanakh itself, he should have died, right? And Hashem says, no, you won't die, but you'll spend the rest of your life atoning for that. Because you did two things. You broke up a family, and you used the sword of Ammon in doing so. The sword shall chase you for the rest of your life, and your family will be broken up. What's the story right after this? Not chapter 12, but chapter 13. I must tell you, my children just moved to a very beautiful area.
Oh, Amnon. Oh, yes.
Tamar and Amnon. Yes. Son of David falls in love with a daughter of David. They just moved to a beautiful area called Givat Ze'ev HaChadasha.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of Givat? Givat Ze'ev was the first city built after the Six-Day War, named after Zev Jabotinsky. It's right over the Green Lines. It's and then they built
a
new
big
part
wedding
of
hall there.
Maybe
Yaakov
was first.
What is it called? Yaakov
was in the first because it was separated.
Okay.
Givat Ze'ev and the Givat Ze'ev Chadasha,
the two. Yeah. There's Ramot, and then there's Givat Ze'ev and Modi.
Oh.
So the first street after Givat Ze'ev, going down to downhill to Givat Ze'ev Chadasha, I'm amazed who did such a thing, and it's a very very Haredi neighborhood. The street is called Rehov Tamar VaAmnon. I've never. Is that crazy? Even to Rehov Amnon, fair enough. Rehov Tamar VaAmnon? A brother and a sister? It's a brother who falls in love with his sister and he figures out to have his way with her? It's despicable. Who wants to live on the street like that? Anyway, so the first story after this is where his house starts to break up. And Tamar happens to be the sister of Avshalom.
Yes.
So Avshalom gets in on the bandwagon too. He kills him. Right, now, Amnon is a despicable man. No one's sorry when he dies. So that the household is broken up over this. So here is the suggestion that I think the movie worked with, that there was a bad marriage, is that David sends him home not once, but twice. Sends him home once, he doesn't go home. So what does David do? David recognizes that we all have urges, and we all have inhibitions. The urge is called the Yetzer Hara, which is sometimes a good thing. We should have a Yetzer Hara for some things, right? If we didn't have a Yetzer Hara, no one would build a house, no one would get married. Okay. So you have a Yetzer Hara. Then you have something called the Yetzer HaTov, your inhibition. Sometimes the inhibition has to, you know, you have to balance between the carrot and the stick, right? The jail is a good inhibition, right? Sometimes it's just the wrong thing to do. Good parenting will teach a child it's wrong to cheat just because it's just wrong, right? So we have to make sure we don't show the child hypocrisy. We don't show, you know, you have to show the child MS so they'll follow, right? So inhibitions are weakened when we're tired, when we're physically weak. But inhibitions are weakest when we're what?
Inebriated.
Yes. Exactly. So David tries to do just that to Uriah. Right? He gets him drunk. And as Shlomo walks in with the drink.
Here's your bottle.
How to get drunk.
I have to help the rabbi make his point.
Show us what, how drunk he was. L'chaim.
Again,
Shlomo, are there some men there that need to daven marv? Because we're about to daven marv.
We're finished.
Oh, they davened already?
No, you'll daven.
Oh, so you'll daven with us. Okay, we need one or two. Anyway. Okay, we need one or two. So, okay.
Yeah, but drunk.
We'll be finished shortly. All right. So even in an inebriated state, Uriah basically defeats David. He's about to die, but he defeats David because David, surrounded by a harem of wives, has a desire for a woman that's not his and can't control himself. And Uriah, being told by the king, he has a good excuse, even if he's a man of honor who doesn't want to disrespect his band of brothers that's fighting the Ammonites. He's told by the king, he can make an excuse. Let me find some comfort in the arms of my wife. And even drunk, he manages to be strong enough not to go to his own wife by the word of the king, and that gets him killed. And he gets him killed. Look what a loyal dog David thinks he is. He sends him himself with the envelope that says, "Put him on the front lines." Now, a king has the right to put anyone anywhere, if it's a difficult mission, right? But the prophet, this is where we'll continue next week, where the prophet tells him a parable. Let's just start with the parable and see from the parable if there's some indication of the nature of the marriage.
I have a question. But if she was, washing herself, like going to the mikvah, shouldn't he have known the date? And that meant, because, usually it's the same date, so then he should have gone like straight to her, as opposed to delaying, because really he's not supposed to delay.
Talking about Uriah now?
Yes, Uriah.
Uriah has been away at battle for many months. He's not interested in tefillah of his mom or make the mitzvah or not. He's just away at battle. And he doesn't know that she went to the mikvah. That's a few days ago.
But otherwise, where would she have gone? Like, she was going
to... At that time, a woman goes to the mikvah when she can. There's taros, there's certain...
Called Mikdash.
There's Mishkan is in Hebron at the time. Yes.
What was David's motive to try to get Uriah to go to his home?
Well, the woman is pregnant. I want him to... She's very early in her pregnancy. When her husband's been away at battle for a year and a half, and she in the middle of that time gives birth, that might get her into some trouble. Right? So let when she gives birth, 8 months from now, let's people ask, wow, how did that... Oh, yeah, remember where you had that furlough. Okay.
Uriah must have known what had happened.
Yeah, yes. Some commentaries have just a sort of a knee-jerk say, yeah, of course they... Otherwise, of course he would go home. He just heard that unfortunately...
Stuff happens.
A woman who goes unwillingly to another man is not rendered privileged to her husband. But we didn't really answer the question before how did she stay with David afterwards? Right. How is Shlomo worthy to be king?
Yeah.
Right? The answer is because if she wasn't rendered forbidden to her husband, then she wouldn't have been. She's not rendered forbidden to the other man either. It's either both or neither. Okay? Let's now look at the parable. The prophet comes to David and says the following. He says, it gets right into business. Shnei anoshim hayu bi'ir echos, chapter 12, verse 1. Mm-hmm. It's two men in this particular city in your kingdom. Echod oshir, one is rich, ve'echod rosh. One is poor. Chapter 12, verse
1.
So one is spelled with it, with the Aleph, and then right away it's spelled without the Aleph. There's a drash on this, but
okay, later.
Okay, where are we? Which?
The very next pasuk. See how it's spelled?
Rash.
Chapter 12, verse 1.
Instead of rash, you say rosh.
One is wealthy and one is poor.
Poor.
12, verse 1. There's your sheep for which you pay fourfold. The rich man had many, many sheep and cattle. The larosh ain't cold. The poor man had nothing. Had one small little sheep, asher kana, that he bought. It wasn't born to him. He bought it because he doesn't have sheep to have other sheep. He just bought this one. Now, what you're about to read is a little, what do we call it? TMF? Is that
Too much information.
Too much information. Okay, so, got to make sure Taylor's right. All right, so it says, Vayechayeho, he raised it. Vatigdalimo, she grew with him. In Banov, and with his sons, really? Yachtov. They played together, yeah. Mipito tochal, the sheep eats from his bread or food. Umikosoti shte, really? With a straw? How is she doing that? With her paws? And from his cup she drank. Uvechiko tishkab. We're getting creepy now.
Yes.
Right. What's that? Uvechiko? What is
it? Is she sleeps with him?
Ah.
Okay. But Ilo Kibas, the sheep was like a child to him. I can picture by now David is saying, Uria, please, get on with it. What's the point here? So, but why is Uria going on with all this?
Natan.
Why is Natan going on with all this?
He wants them to recognize.
He wants what?
David to recognize.
Yeah, he wants him to recognize it enough after he... You know, because David didn't quite get it. David is a poet himself. He writes Tehillim.
Yes.
And he's not getting this. When you read it the first time, you probably don't remember that you read it the first time, because we've read it 100 times. So, So he says, "Vatigdali movim banav yachtav mitoto chamikosot tishtev echekot tishkav etilo kibas." V'yavo heilech leish. So we'll just conclude with this pasuk. A heilech. What's a heilech?
A guest. Passerby.
Passerby, a halach. It's an unusual Hebrew word that hardly appears elsewhere in the Bible. A halach, a passerby, came leisha ashir. Now, when a passerby comes to your house, do you serve him lamb chops? What? A passerby? Someone? I mean, did he know him from before?
That's your offer.
Maybe it's a rat.
You kill a sheep for a passerby?
Maybe an angel
like
Baphom.
Let's see.
Oh, yeah. If Avraham, yes.
Maybe. Vayachmo lakachas mitzono mibkaro lasos laoreach. Ooh, now he's a guest.
Now he's a guest.
Habot lo. Now he's a guest. Aoreach habot lo. Well, v'yavo heilach. Now he's aoreach.
Yes.
But he didn't want to take any of his own multitudes of sheep. He took the one long sheep of that man who loved it so much. Now it's called Laish Habayla. In this one little itty bitty pasuk, this Halech is transposed to an Oreach and then to an Ish. Now I'm sure you're familiar with this Mahalach. The rich man is dead. The poor man is Uri. The sheep is... Who are the many sheep that the rich man has? All of David's wives, right? Okay. Who is the halach?
The
Yetzirah. The urge. That
grows and grows.
Yes.
And it grows and grows.
Yes.
The Yetzirah starts off like a halach.
Can you translate this, please?
The Yetzirah is the evil inclination. The urge. The urge just runs through your head and goes, so... What? How did the urge start as a halach? David is walking on his patio, He's chomping on some grapes, maybe. And he's, whoa, look. Go right into the house and take care of business with someone who's married to you. But he should have walked right away, but right, he's on his own patio. It doesn't take long for the halach to become a guest. A halach, you can close the door and say, oh, nice to see you. You know, I haven't seen you since high school, but I'm in the middle of business now. I'm sorry. I'll give him a cup of ginger ale and a Swiss fudge cookie and send him on his way. But if once he becomes an oreach, he's a guest, it's not so easy to banish a guest. A guest you invited, a guest, you know. But an ish is already paying rent.
VIP.
You need a court order to evict an ish. Important. Right? He's important. The eviction for the Yetzirah, once you let the Yetzirah convince you that gambling is an exciting thing and the drink and the drugs, you can't evict that urge too easily. Right? Halavai, a moral person, is in charge. That's what the observance of Torah does. When you know that I can't eat this because I'm fleshix, I just had meat, I can't eat this because it's not kosher, I can't eat it till I make a bracha. I can't be with my wife because it's not the right time. I can't eat this because it's Pesach and it's Chametz. I can't. You say, well, I'm a slave. Well, actually, you are.
Yes. Can we die here?
You're a slave to your inhibition because you're in charge. You do nothing that takes charge of you. You are in control. It's the person who gives in to these urges that's a slave. Slave to the urge. I'd rather be a slave to my inhibition. So you get into a lot less trouble that way.
Yeah.
So the here is the these, but the most egregious thing is that this urge in the hands of a king who's used to getting what he wants is a problem. If I saw Bathsheba and didn't walk away right away and called for her, she'd give me the Bronx cheer and goodbye. And that's it. Right?
Well, you're from the Bronx. So.
Yeah, that's what I said. So, but I wouldn't call for anyone. But anyway, but I wouldn't think I have the right to call. But the king says, I'm the king. Right? The king should get what he wants.
Like Saul. Yes.
And isn't the Torah says that the king is not supposed to have many
not
wives?
Too many wives, right?
Yeah. To begin with. So
but the Torah keeps telling the kings all the things he shouldn't be doing and then stand with the Torah and, you know. Okay, all right. So we're going to use this parable to see maybe Uriah did not have a bad marriage, because think of the parable. Yes. We'll start with that next week. Okay, if Marv makes door, and then I want to come right back quickly to do Shvius because we have to finish this week and next week. Everybody, right?
We have a menu.
We just have two more dolphins. See the promised land in the end of the tunnel.